It's a great time of year to be a gardener, isn't it? Hope springs eternal in this part of the year and season, and you can dream about getting a bumper crop of your favorite fruits and veggies. But part of being a good gardener is keeping an eye out for potential problems, and after a cool, wet spring, fungal diseases are starting to show up. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today for this edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My guest today, Lisa Johnson, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. She specializes in horticulture education for the home gardener. She works with the Master Gardener Program. And Lisa, it is always a pleasure. Thank you for coming by.
Well, thanks, Larry.
Really appreciate having you here. And this is was a very good, very cool, a wet spring this year. Probably means more fungal diseases.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
You can count on getting calls about problems with fungal diseases in a spring like this. It usually starts with problems with a disease called anthracnose that attacks ash and oak and maple trees. It's usually more of a cosmetic problem, but it does tend to get people excited, and understandably so. Also, we tend to get more calls about apple scab, which is a fungal disease that not only hits apple trees, but also hits pears and some of the other fruit trees. And we're getting some calls now on powdery mildew, not too many yet, but a few on things like Monarda, which is bee balm, garden phlox, those sorts of things. So, yeah, we're starting to see that.
And some are serious and some are just, as you say, cosmetic.
Yeah. The ones that tend to be more serious, there are quite a few of those as well. But some of the tomato diseases can get kind of out of hand, such as Septoria leaf spot and early blight. Those are soil-borne diseases, so you can do some things with mulching to help prevent those. But we do tend to see some problems like that. A lot of the ones that hit woody species can cause some defoliation. We're also starting to see the cedar apple rust come out. We are not seeing symptoms yet, but we've seen the telial horns. They're these big orange globby structures that are on junipers.
Yep.
And those will produce spores that infect your crab apples and your hawthorns and so on. And so we're not seeing the symptoms yet, but we are seeing they're out for the year. So you can, if you have them on your junipers, you can remove them and perhaps prevent some of that spread.
And so that's one way to kind of help in terms of treatment options. Are there many treatment options for these?
Yeah, we like to recommend cultural treatments first, which would be things like making sure that you're planting resistant plants, if you can possibly help it. I know I myself don't buy any garden phlox or Monarda unless they say that they're resistant. But resistant doesn't mean immune. So when we have a cool, wet year like this, you can still end up with problems. But one of the things that we highly recommend is making sure that your plants aren't too close together, that you get good airflow. That helps to dry out the foliage, and that can help reduce some of the incidence of these fungal diseases, because a lot of them require wet foliage in order to have the spores actually germinate.
Our guest today, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. You have a question for her? I hope you'll join in as we talk about your garden and mine here on the Ideas Network. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. You can post a photo, too, garden photo, if you'd like, at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Some of these diseases overwinter, don't they? And you know, what do we do to make sure they don't take up permanent residence?
That's a really good question. A lot of the things like anthracnose and tar spot of maple, we recommend that you rake up the leaves. Well, actually, with anthracnose, usually you'll get leaf drop if you're going to have that happen in the spring. So we recommend raking up the leaves and disposing of them. If you're hot composting, you might be able to get rid of them. But if you're a lazy composter like me, who doesn't I don't turn my pile very often. I don't water it very often. I don't fertilize it very often. So
yeah, I know the feeling.
Yeah, so it's a good idea then to try and get those leaves off of your property. You can take them to the yard waste, and they do hot compost there, so usually that will get rid of them.
In my land, or our property, and also in the neighborhood, there seem to be millions of maple seedlings around. Oh my goodness! And you say that there is an interesting connection between that and box elder bugs.
Yes, and I sympathize. My place looks like a maple seedling farm too. this year, I've got four maples, only one of which is mine, right bordering the property. And so I'm getting sugar maple, I'm getting Norway maple, I'm getting silver maple, and now the silver maple seedlings have just dropped for the year, or the seeds. So I'm going to end up with more seedlings, but the reason that we've been inundated with maple seedlings is because the drought in 2012 and then the dry fall that we had last year stimulate, anytime there's really dry weather like that, it stimulates the maples to produce more seeds. It also stimulates elms and some other rather seedy plants. Ash, for example, they all kind of go into self-preservation mode, like, oh, I'm going to die. We must perpetuate the species. So they produce a whole bunch of seeds. And since box elder bugs feed on maple seedlings, box elder is, after all, a maple. They also feed on silver maple seedlings and other maple seedlings. We tend to, because we've got more of a supply, we have
more
box elder bugs. So for the first time this year, I've got box elder bugs in my yard, and I've seen them mating, and I've seen the nymphs, so I know that they're having a good year.
And as Phil Pelletieri often talks about, in the fall, they may be congregating on your house.
I can hardly wait.
We'll talk about that another time. It's something you probably keep in the back of your head for coming up this
fall. Yeah, a couple of years.
Oh, man. Louise in Platteville has a question for you. Hi, Louise. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. My question has to do with I think it's a Christmas cactus, but it actually starts blooming around Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
It has gotten quite large, a little bit larger than what I really have space for. And I was wondering when it would be an appropriate time to cut it back and how to do that. Just now, I have set it outside on my porch, which I do in the summertime. It seems to like that, and it just grows and grows and grows.
Mm-hmm.
The stems are quite large and very woody. I don't know. I'm not quite sure how it would cut them, but what do I do?
Okay. Well, this is a good time of year, first of all, to do that when it's actively growing. And you can use a pruning shears if you need to do your pruning. I wouldn't cut it back any more than about a third at any one time. And that's probably being a little bit severe. But since you said that you have space issues, I'm figuring that this is kind of a priority. I would try not to cut any branch back any more than 6 to 8 inches if you can help it. And what you should do is you should cut it back to a node. A node is where the leaves come out. In the case of Christmas cactus, the nodes look kind of like segments. So if you cut it back at the end of one segment before another segment begins, I don't know if you can visualize that.
I can visualize that.
I understand.
Yeah, that's the way to do it, and then it should rebud from there.
Okay. And when it blooms, it doesn't have a lot of blooms on it. I've seen some that are just absolutely, they're just proficient in blooms.
But yeah.
Mine will have, maybe, I don't know, 20, but not, I think it should have more, but I don't know if I'm not doing something correctly, or should I be feeding it more, or what am I not doing to make it more, to have it bloom more?
Well, I guess I would look at how long has it been since you've repotted it?
Oh, quite a while.
Okay. They do like to have tight roots, but if it's been 10 years or so in the same pot, you might want to think about repotting it. You don't want to move it into anything that's really large, a lot larger than what you've got, no more than 2 inches in diameter larger, and you should use a cactus type of potting soil. Not that they're necessarily, they're actually tropical plants, but they tend to grow on tree bark, so they need really good drainage. Also, I'm not sure that I would repot it the same year that you're going to be doing really harsh pruning on it, because that could cause some extra, extra stress. So what I'd do is I'd cut it back this year if that's your major concern, and it may not bloom very much for you this year. On the other hand, it may be stimulated to grow, and you may get more blooms. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure how that will work, but I would next year do some repotting on it.
You would not probably worry too much about fertilizing, would you? I think.
No, they don't really actually need all that much fertilizer. You can apply a slow-release fertilizer, you know, the granules, and you may want to do that anyway after you do the pruning. But generally, you don't need to do too much of that with Christmas cactus. They really don't need a whole lot of nutrition.
Thanks, Louise, for calling. I appreciate your call. I want to give Robin and Madison a chance to join us. Robin, hello to you.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a cherry tree in my backyard that gets brown rot every year and just completely destroys the fruit.
Yeah.
I've tried a couple of different fungicides, but it's come back again, and I'm not sure what to do.
Okay. I would have to refer you to, we have a publication called Growing Cherries, Apricots, and Other Stone Fruits in Wisconsin. It's at the Learning Store. And they have recommendations on what fungicide is currently being recommended that as being the best to use for brown rot. One thing you can do is make sure that your cherry is pruned well so that you get good air circulation. With any fungal disease, that can help. Is it in a place where it gets shade, or is it in full sun?
It's part shade.
Okay. That may be part of the issue as well. If you can thin out any branches that are hanging over it so it gets more sun and continues to be able to dry out, and I think that will probably help you. There are also, if it just becomes a problem with having to spray every year, I believe there are some cultivars that are resistant, so you may want to look into mm-hmm. that.
And the Learning Store, you can go to that online. It's learningstore.uwex.edu.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes up, you click on Lawn and Garden, and then there's some tabs that come up, and you click on Fruit, and you can do a search for cherries, and the cherry section will talk about brown rot.
Have it all in about a minute,
yeah.
Or maybe two.
The other thing you can do is you can go to, if you Google PDDC, and then UWEX, that will bring up Brian Huddleston's Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic page. And I believe, I'm not positive on this, but I think there's a fact sheet there on brown rot.
Yeah, I think so.
So if you don't find it in the one place, it's in the other.
Yeah, I think it's in both, to be honest. Thanks, Robin. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, if you have a question for our guest today. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's where you go. And you can also say if you've got a diseased leaf you want Lisa to see, you can take a picture of it, post it on my Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller. Jason Butler, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just to let you know, next week on Garden Talk, the Vicars of Vegetables join us, and they'll have some advice for growing great veggies, and I bet they'll have a few garden haikus to share as well. That's next week on Garden Talk. Right now, Lisa Johnson is helping us keep our garden healthy and productive. Always great to have her come by. If you have a question about your garden or maybe an experience to share, call in at 1-800-642-1234 or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Diane in Brookfield, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have about 6 peony plants in my backyard.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Oh, we lost her. Diane, I'm sorry you're gone, but you can call back and we'll get you back on.
Aww.
Let's go to Pam in Appleton. Hi, Pam.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. Okay, I have, my husband and I have a crab apple that gets rust every single year. It's supposed to be a resistant cultivar. It's prairie fire. Anyway, some years we're able to spray it, some years we're not, because, you know, sometimes, like this year, it just keeps raining or it's too windy. So we haven't sprayed yet this year. My husband did prune it quite a bit to kind of increase the airflow through, but I'm wondering what you would recommend that we do, since we haven't sprayed it before the leaves have come out.
Okay, let me just make sure that it's not apple scab, but it is rust, cedar apple rust.
Maybe it's scab, I guess.
Okay, mm-hmm. Scab would be, it starts as kind of olive green spots that then turn black and the leaf turns yellow around these spots and then the leaves fall off.
Leaves fall off, and by the end of July, if we haven't sprayed it, it's practically leafless.
Okay, and so you don't get little rusty colored kind of tentacles hanging down underneath the leaf?
No.
Okay, all right, so that's solved. Good. We are talking about apple scab. Typically prairie fire is resistant to that, so that is disappointing. I have heard, though, of that occasionally happening. Is your tree in shade or sun or?
Well, it gets sun until kind of late afternoon, and then there's another tree that shades it. But
okay.
It
probably gets 8 hours of sun?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty sure it does.
Okay. All right. Well, that's one thing that, you know, trying to keep it in as much sun as possible certainly is helpful. And you've done a great thing by trying to keep it pruned so that you get good air circulation. There are various products that you can use after it's been leafed out. It's best to spray them as soon as possible before it starts to get too hot, because you can end up, depending on the product, with some phytotoxicity problems. So I would, spray either in the morning or in the late afternoon or evening after the sun has gone down. You also want to try, and if you use sprinklers, make sure that you're not getting wetness on the foliage. Of course, the ultimate solution is to take it out and plant another tree that is resistant. Also making sure that you rake up any leaves that do fall so that you don't have extra inoculum sitting around. But there are some copper spray type products that you can use that are labeled for apple scab. And so, you know, you don't have to use necessarily the chemical types of fungicides.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
Sure.
Ben.
Good luck with that. You will probably have to do multiple sprays over the season.
Not a one-time thing.
Yeah, unfortunately not.
Jean in Rice Lake, appreciate your call. Hello.
Hi. I have a puzzle I hope you can solve. We came back from a vacation this winter, and it was very cold in our house. I lost about 20 house plants.
Oh, that sucks.
But I had some that survived.
Oh, good.
Some of my Christmas cactus died, the ones in the smaller pots, but two bigger ones survived. A China doll survived. And most puzzling of all, I was seeing if I could root the ficus, China doll, and Christmas cactus. They were in a vase on my kitchen counter. It was the water was frozen solid. They all survived.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm wondering how that can be.
That's a really good question. I am really surprised to hear that they survived in the frozen water. I don't have an answer for that.
Neither.
Okay, and thank you for solving the puzzle about all the maple and basswood.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. Thanks, Jean. Maybe somebody's listening in who would have an answer on that frozen.
Yeah, that's really unusual for a tropical plant.
Let's turn to Cindy in La Crosse next. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Larry. This spring must have been wonderful for Creepin' Charlie also.
Yeah.
I have a huge yard, a big garden, lots of flowers, live on a farm, and I have Creepin' Charlie in every nook and cranny. Is there something not totally noxious that would at least slow it down?
Oh, I wish I could say that there was, but not really. There has been some research done in, I believe it was Indiana, where a few years ago they were touting the use of borax. And while it works in Indiana, it does not work in Wisconsin. Our soils are different, and you have to use so much borax that it ends up being toxic to everything. And since it is it's an element, it doesn't break down. Boron doesn't break down in the soil, so you've then basically poisoned your soil. So the borax thing, unfortunately, I can't recommend. Creeping Charlie is just one of those really tough weeds to get rid of, especially if you have a lot of it. What you might want to do is sort of maybe draw a line in the sand, so to speak, maybe just letting it be in the lawn and trying to keep it out of your vegetable beds or your perennial beds and, kind of letting it go in the lawn. Other than pulling it and constant vigilance, there are some chemical solutions, but they should be applied at very certain times of year. The first one is when it's in full bloom in May, which we've kind of already passed that point, although in some areas of the state we might be not at that point yet, but here in southern Wisconsin, we've already passed that. So you can spray then during full bloom because the plant has spent a lot of energy getting flowers going, and so it's more vulnerable then. The other time is in usually October after the first frost, and there's a kind of physical change that takes place at that point that makes Creeping Charlie more vulnerable to spray at that time. So that being said, those two times are the best times to try and control it chemically. And what Extension recommends as chemical controls are products that have three chemicals in them, 2,4-D, dicamba, and MCPP. Unfortunately, they're still... Sorry?
Could that be posted on the page since I'm actually outside pulling Creepin' Charlie as we speak?
We do have a fact sheet on it at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and it tells you the chemicals to use and when to use them and so on. You can find that, PDDC for Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and then just... type that into your search browser and then type UWEX and that'll bring it right up and then go to fact sheets. And I believe it's under C for Creeping Charlie.
You know, Cindy, I don't know if you have any kids or not, but my daughter and I would go out on the lawn together and start pulling Creeping Charlie. And frankly, you can make pretty good dent in it.
Yeah. If you're vigilant.
If you can do a pretty good job if you're vigilant. In just an hour, a couple people out on the lawn for an hour can accomplish a heck of a lot, I've learned.
I also, speaking of kids and pets, I don't really recommend using a lot of herbicide or insecticide type products on your lawn if you do have kids or pets that are out on your lawn a lot. So I try and avoid that if at all possible. But if you have kids, you can have contests on who can pull the longest piece of Creeping Charlie. Have a prize.
Well, actually, my kids are old enough where they have their own Creeping Charlie. I'm not going to worry about the lawn. I live on an organic farm. I've never used any kind of chemicals, but I've never had Creeping Charlie.
This like, bad,
I've
huh?
got it this year.
Yeah,
and where is it? Is it in your vegetable garden?
It's working into the vegetable garden, which is pretty small right now, and I have lots and lots of perennials. I have a huge yard, and it's just everywhere.
Our sympathies.
Yeah, and you mulch the heck out of everything, and
yeah.
So I went to Menards and bought all kinds of mulch, so I'm remulching again.
Oh boy! Well, good luck to you, Cindy.
Thank you. Thank you for your help.
Yeah, appreciate the call. It just, you know, it just never goes away. I mean, you can literally have it eliminated from your lawn.
Yep.
And next year, it's right back.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you have neighbors that have it, it crawls over from next door, too.
Yeah, it's just,
you know, when you pull it, you don't always get all the roots. So it's one of those things that you just keep working on. It's, part of the garden.
I've kind of given up on my lawn. We have, you know, Emily, our daughter, is 10. She's got lots of friends in that 10 to 12-year-old range. They kick the soccer ball around on that lawn of ours.
Yep.
The heck with it.
Yeah, just let it bloom.
I've got to tell you, it looks awful. There's clover, there's Creeping Charlie, but it's not worth, it's green.
Yeah, that they got something to say about that.
It's green, and so that's the way it's going to stay for a while, mm-hmm. I think. I probably never have a manicured lawn. Mark in Wausau. Hi, thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's on your mind?
We have a grand old maple tree in our front yard that this year only half of it leaves out. And I was wondering if there's anything that I can do to save it or what's the chances of survival.
Yeah. How old is it, by the way? Is it a big one?
It's a big one. It's about 24 to 36 inches in diameter.
We are seeing a lot of winter damage that occurred. It may be a combination of winter and drought damage. We're still seeing effects from the drought from a couple of years ago where trees were weakened and then the cold weather has helped to finish them off. What you should probably do is have a certified arborist come out and prune out all the dead stuff. You're up in Wausau, so... Yeah, you may want to wait a little while yet. I've still got some stuff that is budding out a little bit. I don't know whether that's where it'll stay. Sometimes you see kind of this if the tree has been damaged and some of it starts to bud out and then it just stops because it doesn't have enough energy in those branches to do anything else. But occasionally they will come back. As well. So you might want to leave it a couple of weeks longer and at that point have a certified arborist come out and take a look at it and determine what's dead and what's alive and what's really going on with the tree. Because it could also possibly be verticillium wilt or some other disease, but my guess is it's probably the winter and drought damage. We are seeing a lot of that this year.
All right, thanks, Mark, for calling. I got an email from Claudia who says, why are my pepper plants getting yellow leaves and brown spots? Brown spots.
Yeah, that sounds fungal to me.
Yeah.
I am not sure what kind of fungus that might be, but you might want to send a sample to Brian Huddleston or a photo. Usually peppers are pretty disease-free, but with the cold, wet spring, there might be something going on there.
And pepper plants don't do well in cold, wet.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, they're...
They get stunted, and they don't bear well, and...
Yeah, that's why it's usually better to plant late on peppers.
Yes.
So that could be it, too. But a photo and send it to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. PDDC, again, is the online... you can probably get an answer from Brian, at least a good guess.
Mm-hmm.
And a Facebook question from Donna. I have spotted spurge in my landscape, close to the house and some in the grass. in the backyard. How can I get rid of it? I first noticed it last year, and I pulled a ton of it late in the fall. What is spotted spurge, by the way?
Spotted spurge is a kind of prostrate weed, and it does like dry conditions. So after the drought, we saw kind of a proliferation of it. It particularly does well in areas that have compacted soil, or that are next to the driveway, and so they've got salt in the soil. You see it in median strips, but you do also see it in garden situations. It produces little tiny flowers in the axils of the leaves, and it tends to seed rather prolifically. So my mantra with all weeds is don't let them go to seed. And so that's one thing, making sure that they don't go to seed. You can pull it. You did a good thing. They do have a tap root, so they're easily pulled. But the only other real option to do with those then is spray. You can use Roundup. That does work. But if it's in with other plants, that can be a little bit more of an issue, because Roundup is something that will kill everything. Mm-hmm. So what you might want to do if it's in among ornamental grasses is use a broadleaf weed killer. But really, pulling and spraying are your only two options.
And we have a Facebook question from Donna about peonies, one plant, the dark pink that was developed, has developed a flower with a bud on top of the open bloom. What can I do to prevent this from happening? So a flower.
Wow.
A bud on top of the open bloom.
I've never heard of that.
I've never seen that.
I'm wondering if it's coming from the base of the flower or whether it's coming from the center of the... Boy, I'd love to see a picture of that.
Yeah, it's a 70-year-old plant from her grandmother.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it's an old, old plant. Maybe that's why we...
Yeah, I mean, sometimes when you see extra floral parts, it can be a phytoplasma or a virus or something like that. If you see a proliferation, but just one bud, it sounds like an anomaly as long as it's just the one.
Yeah.
If you're seeing that kind of symptom, though, on a lot of them, then I would suspect a phytoplasma. I'm not sure whether peonies get aster yellows, but that is something. Usually you'll see, though, with that, you'll see other symptoms. You'll see discoloration. You'll see... just a general greening of the flower parts. So I think it's probably, if it's just the one flower, it's probably just some kind of anomaly. But if you see it on more, I would be a little concerned about that.
Take a photo.
Yeah, we'd love to see it.
Put it up on my Facebook page. I'd love to see it. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can post that photo. I'd love to see it. Doris in Wisconsin Dells, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I live in Iowa. I have a hawthorn tree that's probably maybe 6 or 7 years old. It's a lovely young tree that leafs out beautifully in the spring, and then it gets, the leaves start to turn brown, and most of them drop very early in the summer. And I've been worried that the first time it happened, I thought I was going to lose the tree. But the next spring, it came back healthy and leafed out and went through the same pattern. And it's done that probably the last 4 years.
Okay, so you don't see spots on the top of the leaves and then orange tentacles hanging down underneath?
No, not at all.
Okay, just turns brown. What I'm wondering is that hawthorns are very susceptible to aphids. Aphid damage. Have you seen aphids on the new growth particularly?
I haven't. Maybe I just haven't looked closely enough. I'm not sure. But
they do blend in.
Mm-hmm.
But that sounds like it could be aphid feeding that could be causing the leaves to, become desiccated. Other possibility is it in a real droughty area?
No, it isn't.
Okay.
Although we have had some pretty serious droughts the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. And do you water it during the drought?
Probably as much as I water everything else, which is, you know, not as often as I should.
Okay. That could be affecting it as well. So it should get at least an inch or two if you've got sandy soil a week if Mother Nature does not provide. So I'd check out the possible aphid thing, and okay. I'd make sure that you keep it watered. Also, are there any pesticides that are used on your lawn that might be drifting?
Not at all.
Okay.
No,
all right, so
all.
We can eliminate drift as a potential cause. I would look into those two others. The other thing that you can do is once you see that it's just starting to turn brown is send a sample in to Brian. Or since you said you're in Iowa, you might want to send it to your state's plant pathology lab.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep.
Appreciate the information.
Yep.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Boy, we have lots of photos up on the Facebook page. And we had the question about peonies. And
there's another peony.
Yeah, this is, well, this is, might have been the question that we were dealing with.
Oh, that we lost.
Yeah. Six plants of different colors, only one plant, the dark pink, has developed a flower with a bud on top of the open bloom. So can you see the, I'm trying to.
All that I see are stamens.
Yeah.
The yellow stamens there. That's normal. I see. Okay. She's saying that there are petals that are inside. Well, that may be how that particular flower grows, unless there are other flowers on the bush that look different. I'm not sure whether that's a Japanese tree peony or whether that's an herbaceous peony. But there are some that are, they have a form called a bomb, where the center is full of those yellow stamens. And then others have the stamens, and then they have more petals on top. And there are others that you don't really see the stamens too much, that they're just petals.
Yep.
So there are a number of different forms. There are also singles that just have one row of petals, and then they have the stamens in the middle, which are the male part of the plant that produces the pollen. So that would be normal. So I'm not positive, not seeing another flower that doesn't look like that's not the normal form.
Okay. We have lots of callers online to visit with our guest today, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Tom in Oshkosh has been waiting a long time, so let's go to Tom right now. Thank you for waiting.
Thank you. Hello?
Yes, what's on your mind?
I'm calling to ask about our soil here. It's heavy clay, and we are in the path of a drain area, and we have flooding when we have these wet springs, but then we've created a couple of different rain gardens, and we're looking for plants that can stand up to the flooding and then handle near drought conditions during some of the drier parts of the summer.
Okay. You know where you might look? I try not to recommend one company over another, but I happen to know that Neil Dybal's Prairie Nursery site has a mix of plants that are called claybusters. And those are a really good set of plants that if you go to the Prairie Nursery site that you can see what those are. But I can also tell you that some plants that work really well in clay in rain gardens would include things like rattlesnake master, compass plant, prairie dock, and there are a number of the sedges that will do pretty well in those kinds of areas. I would stay away from things like butterfly weed, which is great in areas that drain well and has a nice tap root, but doesn't do so well in flooded areas.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
But those are a few that you can you can try.
Give it a shot. Thanks a lot, Tom. Mike in Muscadet, hello.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm kind of doing an experiment. We had a bunch of trees and logs cut up into firewood, and all the sawdust was in a big pile, and I decided to put it, I had an old bathtub, and I put all that sawdust in a bathtub and planted some sweet corn in there, and the sweet corn's come up. I'm just wondering what kind of fertilizer should I use to make sure that it'll germinate, produce ears of corn.
Okay.
I don't know if sawdust itself is going to do it.
No, sawdust itself is not going to do it. Actually, I think you're probably going to struggle because corn needs a pretty high amount of nitrogen, and especially fresh sawdust tends to have a lot of carbon in it and tends to use up nitrogen as the microbes are breaking it down. It also can get very hot as the microbes are breaking it down. So you may have trouble growing anything in pure, fresh sawdust.
At least this year.
Yeah, at least this year. Now, if you compost it for a season and spread it thinly, it can work. But again, you still need to use some nitrogen. The best thing I could actually recommend for you is to let it just sit for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And let it break down a little bit because it's really not suitable for growing much of anything in right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Even though they sprouted, that don't mean I'm going to get anything.
No.
Right.
You'd be applying a lot of fertilizer.
Yeah.
A lot of nitrogen.
A lot of nitrogen fertilizer for that. And does your bathtub have drainage in it, I assume?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
So if you want
to try it,
you got to just keep in mind, you got to be applying fertilizer, nitrogen fertilizer every week, probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Miracle-Gro wouldn't work, right?
Well, Miracle-Gro it's a high nitrogen product, so that could work. But again, I think you're just going to have problems.
Yeah, it's going to be a battle.
You might cook the roots, actually, with as the sawdust breaks down.
I wouldn't think of that. It might get way too hot under there for
exactly.
The roots.
Yeah.
Because with sawdust, the moisture stays there constantly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You only have to water it once a month.
Well, there you go, Mike. You got a little challenge ahead of you there, but you might as well just leave the sawdust in there unless you want to take it out and put some dirt in there and some soil.
But it'll make a great mulch in a year or so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So good luck. Thank you for calling. I want to give Patty in Stone Lake a chance to join us. Patty, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just love your show and the weekly question or two regarding Creeping Charlie. We have a huge greenhouse up here in winter, and they sell everything imaginable, including Creeping Charlie. And I'm just wondering who on earth would buy it and why? Who would plant it?
They do have some variegated forms of Creeping Charlie that are sold as a hanging basket kind of thing. Of course, if it hits the ground, it's likely to root in. I don't know about the winter survivability of it, but this is something that has concerned me as well because I have seen it in greenhouses more often than I'd like to. And I'm really not sure how well it survives in your area, but I believe it survives in our area. I would not buy it myself.
Well, I was just thinking, I have a gold mine here.
Yeah. It is the variegated type, though, that you're seeing, right, with the white on the leaves and the white flowers?
I think so.
Yeah.
It is an ornamental form that was bred by, I believe, Walter's Gardens. And I admit I was really surprised when I first saw that show up in the ornamentals list.
You know, just relating to Creeping Charlie, and we've had a few questions about it, Terry in Nina has a suggestion Terry says, I have a small yard, but each summer I let part of the backyard grow long. I don't cut it. And I've eliminated Creeping Charlie from the sections the next year.
Hmm. So basically she's shading it out.
Yeah.
But it does grow in partial shade as well as...
She may have a very unique situation there.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great idea if you can do that, but most people can't let their lawn grow that long. But good for you, Terry.
Yeah, absolutely. Jennifer in Cross Plains. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, we have a really big yard, and it grows everything but grass, and I'm fine with that, except for, we call it ground thistle. I don't know what it is, but those little pokey plants, they kind of look like dandelion leaves, but they're all prickly.
It's a thistle, yeah.
Yeah. So I tried just spreading like a weed and feed that would kill things like dandelions, but these things are almost indestructible. Is there anything you can do?
They are almost indestructible. They're also perennial. So unfortunately, a pre-emergent type treatment will not work for it because pre-emergent will only work on killing off seeds. So if it's produced any seeds, you may have stopped them from germinating, but unfortunately you're not taking care of the parent plant. What you can do is you can spot treat with Roundup if you don't have too many of them. And I would use not the ready-to-use stuff, which is only like 1% or 2% active ingredient, but I would use something like 18% active ingredient and mix that up in a little spray bottle and just spot treat, being careful not to hit your grass if there is any grass to be protected.
No, I'm fine with killing other stuff, too.
Yeah, that's about the best way to get rid of it.
Can I ask another quick question?
Sure.
We have something that is, I'm sure, a weed. It's probably as tall as grass, and but they look like little tiny wispy ferns. And I'm wondering if there is a way to identify it. I like it, and it is prettier than all of the other things that are growing in place of our grass. So I would love to make it grow more if I could figure out what it was.
Yeah, send me a picture of it at the Dane County Extension Office. If you can take a digital picture and just send it to me there, and I can probably identify it for you.
Lisa Johnson.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Back to our Facebook page for a minute here. We've got a number of photos. Here's one of a maple. Diane wants to know what's on her maple leaf there.
Ah, that is spindle gall. It's caused by a microscopic, I forget whether it's a mite, but it is a totally cosmetic problem.
Little bumps on the leaf.
Yeah, little bumps on the leaf, not something to really worry about.
Joni has a photo here of a little bug or caterpillar.
Yeah, a little monarch butterfly
larva.
That's great. Or caterpillar.
Wondering what that was. And let's see. And oh, boy. Kyle has a photo here of an EAB, emerald ash borer disease tree in Saginaw, Michigan.
Yeah, you can tell the larvae have been really active there under the bark. Oh, that's really awful. Since we identified emerald ash borer in Madison last December, we've been getting lots of calls about emerald ash borer and people concerned about their ash trees.
Another photo from Mary of an Austrian pine a close-up of the shoot tip of it.
I think that's Dothostroma needle blight, and Brian does have a fact sheet on that at the PDD website. So if you Google PDDC and then UWEX, that will bring that up, and you go to fact sheets and look for D for Dothostroma needle blight.
Claire in Baraboo, do you have a question for us?
Good morning. Yes, I do, Larry. I know that peony bushes do not like to be moved, but they were in a really bad place where there was not much sun in my yard, so I moved about five of them about 5 years ago. And, Deb, they've been coming up beautifully every year, but no buds, no flowers.
Okay.
Is there anything I can do?
It usually just takes time. 5 years is a little longer than I would have expected. I would have expected about 3 years after moving. Are they in full sun?
Yes, they are.
Okay. What I would do is keep them fertilized and watered, and they should, if they haven't been planted too deep. That's the other thing that can cause that sort of issue. You want to make sure that the buds from where the leaves come out are no more than about an inch and a half below the surface of the soil. So you might want to take a look at that in the fall and just see where those are coming up out of.
Yeah.
Those are the two main things. Actually, there's three main things. Moving the plant, not having enough sun, and having it planted too deep are the three things that cause peonies typically not to bloom.
Yeah, for some reason, we always want to plant them a little deeper.
Yeah, than they
should be. Oh, Claire, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Visiting today with Lisa Johnson. Lisa is a Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator. She specializes in horticulture education for the home gardener and for horticulture professionals in the green industry. Our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On this edition of Garden Talk, we are visiting with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. She specializes in hort education for the home gardener and for horticulture professionals in the green industry. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening in. And certainly, if you have a question about your garden, or maybe your lawn or your trees, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And certainly if you have a photo you want to send along, that would be fine too. We would certainly love to hear from you. And we've actually talked about a lot of photos that have come in, and we'll be visiting about another one or two here coming up. But right now I want to go to Frank in La Crosse, who's been waiting a long time. Frank, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, I've got a question and a comment. The question is, I've got a 25 to 30-year-old asparagus patch that's been fading the last few years. And I fertilize it regularly every year. I mulch the weeds, but my yield's going down. So what I wanted to know is there any way to rejuvenate it, or should I just dig it up and start over?
Well, usually about 20, 25 years is the outer edge of how long asparagus plants are productive. So I would say at this point that probably replanting would be your best option. Make sure that you choose male versus female varieties, because the males don't produce the fruit that takes energy away, so they tend to be more prolific in terms of producing shoots. There are a lot of nice new varieties that are out there. Just realize that it'll take a couple of years before you can really start harvesting again after you've replanted.
Yeah, that's what I thought. My comment is this. You've had questions about Creeping Charlie on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of years ago, Larry had a lawn care specialist on, and his solution to that was to fertilize your grass and get it healthy and growing. And I went out and took a small patch and tried that, and it works. That's the good news. The bad news is the grass grows like crazy, and I had to mow it.
to mow it.
But it works.
Yeah, that's the idea there, again, being just like with Terry, that you're kind of out-competing the Creeping Charlie and shading it out. So mowing high after you fertilize, too, is also helpful.
4 inches anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Frank. And thanks for that reminder. I mean, if you have a good, healthy lawn.
Mm-hmm. That helps with the weeds.
Yeah, it helps a lot with the weeds. And Diane in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Two things. What is your suggestion for containing weeds in a vegetable garden? And the second one is I have some brownish edges to the leaves of my citronelle corabels. You know, it's that lime green color one.
Mm-hmm.
They're seem a little stunted to me.
Okay. Well, let's
Those
look
are
at
my two questions.
Let's look at the coral bell first. I am familiar with that cultivar. Is it in full sun?
No.
Okay. All right. So then it's probably not burn. Has there been a granular fertilizer that's been applied around it?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. No. Sometimes if there are granular fertilizers and they stick to the leaves, you can get brown spots recurring from that. So my guess would be that it's probably some kind of fungal issue unless it's dried out at all. And for a fungal disease, is it on only the old leaves or the new leaves or both?
I think both.
Okay.
I think they were kind of hit by the winter, to be quite frank.
Oh, this is old leaves or new leaves?
Well, I don't think there were any old leaves.
Okay.
These are coral bells.
Yes,
And I just planted them last year.
Okay.
Toward the end of last year. So
they tend to be semi-evergreen, some of them, so I wasn't sure whether you were referring to the old overwintering leaves.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Okay. What you might want to do then is send a sample into the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. I'm not sure what kind of fungus that is, but it's sounding like, since it's in partial shade and we've eliminated some of the other potentials, that it might be a fungal disease. You might be able to use a copper spray on it, but without knowing what kind of fungus it is, I'm kind of hesitant to recommend a product.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. So then the veggie weeds, there are a couple of strategies depending on the types of weeds that we're talking about. If we're talking about perennial weeds like quackgrass and thistles and dandelions, you have a different strategy than dealing with annual weeds. So it's good to identify the type of weed that you have so that you know, which you might be able to use. Now, if you plant from seed in your vegetable garden, you can't use any pre-emergent products like corn gluten meal.
No, these were actual plants that were put in.
Okay. In that case, you could use pre-emergence, but it's too early in the season to do that. The thing is, the pre-emergence work by not allowing seeds to germinate. So the chemical doesn't distinguish between a good seed and a bad seed. So if you're only using transplants, you might be able to get away with that. The other thing to do is mulch the heck out of in between the rows. That can help suppress annual weeds in particular. Things like thistles and quackgrass, I hate to recommend using chemicals in the vegetable garden. What you might want to do if it's really, really bad is for one season work on chemically treating part of that area until it's clear and then plant in it next year. The other thing that you can do is you can continue to pull and, you know, just kind of keep up with it and keep a heavy mulch in between the vegetable rows. It's another way to try and manage it.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Granules. That's okay with.
There are. You have to look at the package. There are some of the pre-emergent granules that you can use. Also, corn gluten meal, which is a pre-emergent, but it's a natural product. But again, you have to be sure that you're. You're applying it at the appropriate time, because if the weed seeds have all germinated, a pre-emergent is not going to help you this year.
Not going to work. Good luck, Diane. Thank you so much for calling. I want to give Donna in Waterford a chance to join us. Donna, hello.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And I have oak trees. I have oak trees, but the one was leaning over my neighbor's yard, which is nothing down there. It's open land. But he trimmed it in April or March, And I'm wondering, is my tree in danger of the bug getting into that open sore?
Well, if it was March, you're probably okay because our spring was so late this year that we didn't really have the oaks leafing out until at least mid-April. So if they weren't leafed out at the time, you're probably okay with that. Generally, and I can tell that you know this, that oaks should not be trimmed between April and November because of the possible spread of oak wilt disease via there's an insect, picnic beetle, that will pick up that fungus and attack wounded oaks. So usually if people have to trim during the growing season, we do tell them to use a pruning paint. So the only time you'd be pruning oaks during the growing season should be if there was storm damage and you actually you know, had to prune. And we generally do not recommend using pruning paint at all, but in this case, what it does is form a physical barrier. So I guess My answer to your question, in a long roundabout way, is if it wasn't leafed out at the time that it was pruned, you're probably okay.
Okay, because I got five oaks, so I don't want.
You definitely don't want to let the beetle get in there.
No, and frankly, I forget if it was Phil Pelletieri I had on the show who was telling about some research done on the oaks where. The oaks were cut, the limbs were cut, and then they were timing how long it took to get picnic beetles there.
Mm-hmm.
It was minutes.
Wow.
It was like 10, 12 minutes.
Wow.
I mean, they know.
There's a chemical that is released by the oak that's, it's almost like a pheromone, almost, you know, acts that way that it attracts the insects.
So you really have to be, you really can't be cutting on those oaks. If you must, then, as you say,
use that pruning paint, toot sweet.
Right away.
Yeah.
Right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you have it, Donna. Ben in Berlin, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Have a newer property to my family and a lot of trees, maple, ash, everything that are 20 feet tall or whatever, and I don't have mulch around them or rings, you know, just haven't got to that part yet. I know that's probably the preferred. But so now there's grass right up to the trunks, and a couple people have told me that you can round up that grass, you know, in a foot around the tree or whatever, so you don't have that grass growing up on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, doesn't Roundup kill the tree?
Well, if you get Roundup on the trunk of a younger tree, yes, it can. And particularly if there are suckers coming up from that tree, what some people will do is they'll take cardboard and kind of tape it around the trunk and then apply the Roundup. You also want to make sure that if there are exposed roots that you try and avoid that. If you're trying to get rid of grass around the tree, probably the best part is to do the best advice is to gently remove it with, you know, a trowel or something. And, you know, that will help protect the tree from getting hit by the lawnmower if you're not having, or the weed whacker, goodness forbid.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that it's a good thing to remove that grass, but if you can do it manually, that's better than using Roundup if possible.
And then you could mulch it a little bit, maybe?
Yes, I would recommend mulching out to at least 3 feet. You also want to make sure your mulch is not up against the trunk, particularly with oaks, because they're very sensitive to grade changes, and you don't want it any thicker than 3 inches. I have seen advertised at some of the home improvement stores this year, tree rings, where they have like a 6-inch tall ring, and you're supposed to put soil into that, which I really want to call and say, hey, you're going to kill off people's trees if you're doing that. Especially
oaks. Which is exactly what will happen.
Exactly what will happen. Yeah, a lot of trees are very sensitive to having soil piled up against their bark. So don't use the tree rings.
One question about Roundup, does it kill by contact, or like if you spray it on the grass, does it then leach down below the grass and get into, you know, like say the tree roots or whatever? Does it actually have to physically contact the plant?
It has to physically contact green growing material, although sometimes with, again, thin-barked young trees, it can have a deleterious effect. But it works best on green growing material. If you spray it so that it doesn't run off in excess, it should just stay in the plant material and in the root system. It becomes deactivated in soil, but it does take a while to deactivate. So in areas that have been sprayed, you're not supposed to replant in them for, depending on the formulation, it may be a day or 2 days or 3 days or even a week.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for calling. Lewis in Manitowish Waters. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about trying to propagate a multiplier onion patch in my garden. I've tried it with new bulbs that I've gotten from other people, and I've bought bulbs from the seed stores and planted them. They grow and eventually die. Is it my soil or is it the climate up here that prevents me from doing this?
Huh. What's the drainage like?
It's a very sandy type with high mulch, a lot of stuff, leaves and pine needles and everything into it every fall. And so to me, it's a good quality soil.
Yeah, that sounds like a good quality soil. I am not sure why. You're planting those in spring, right?
Yes.
And you're using new stock, not overwintered stock?
Well, they do overwinter, grow over the winter, or sprout again in the spring.
Right.
They do form the multiplying bulb on the top of the sprout, and then those fall down to the ground, and they're supposed to multiply into new sets, and mine just seem to go dormant.
Hmm. I have the opposite problem. We had a planting of, it was an ornamental onion called Hare that has bulbils at the top, and we are still battling that darn thing and pulling it out, and it germinates just far too well. I am not sure why yours is not. Maybe as if it's falling into the mulch, it dries out. Not really sure.
In fact, I've gotten some sprouts from my daughter who lives in Madison and planted those, and those seem to eventually grow for a year or two and eventually just fade away.
Hmm.
Yeah. Got a stump.
Maybe you can send me some of your sprouts. If yeah. You're having
I don't think you want this stuff.
Oh, man. Well, Lewis, I wish we had more of a better answer or a more informed answer, but
out of my territory, I guess.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to go to our Facebook page again. This is if you're near your computer, you should go on to our the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and take a look at some of the photos. This is a photo of a bush and then a close-up of the flower from Kay, and it's green bush and then this beautiful white flowers with, it looks like two kinds of flowers in one bloom.
Yeah, that's very typical of hydrangeas and viburnums and some other plants. The florets on the outside are typically sterile, and then the flowers on the inside are typically the ones that are going to produce the seeds. This looks like a viburnum. To me, I am not sure. I can tell you better which one it isn't as opposed to which one it is. I know it's not high bush cranberry. It's not arrowwood viburnum. It might be viburnum sargentii. It's not viburnum lantana. It is one of the viburnums, that I can tell you.
All right. Benita in Muscadet, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm calling in regards to the gentleman, I believe from La Crosse, that was concerned about his asparagus bed.
Yep.
It was deteriorating. What I have discovered over several years of doing it is just as soon as the frost is out of the ground, you get your rototiller out there and you rototill the dickens out of that asparagus bed. And then we use cow manure as our fertilizer for it. And we have an asparagus bed that is 45 plus years old, and it produces very a lot each year.
Abundantly. Wow.
And the 1 year that was circumstances beyond our control, 2012, when we were not able to do that tilling, we had a poor productive year.
Hmm. Wow, is that interesting.
So,
and I recommended this to several of my friends, and they are finding that that is also helping their asparagus beds.
Huh. So I assume what you're doing is basically propagating the roots.
Right.
Are you getting the old crowns, though, or are you rototilling those?
When the asparagus bed is done this year, you know, I let it go to the tops.
Uh-huh.
I leave those tops on all winter. Then in the spring, I just as soon as I can, I clear them tops off.
Uh-huh.
Then I get out the rototiller and I just rototill the dickens out of it.
Wow.
I'll be...
That's unusual. That I've never heard that recommendation before.
But
thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. If you've got, give it a try and give us a call back next year and let us know what
happened. That would be worth, yeah, you know, why not? Or even for half of the bed.
Yeah, if you've got an older bed that you're thinking of
you're
replanting
get rid of it anyway,
I guess.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Thanks, Benita.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. I appreciate the call very much. And I had another photo up here that I wanted to. Barbara says, every year my poppies have some type of stem rot before they open. What can I do to correct this?
Hmm.
And it is a nasty.
Yeah,
looking,
I see that.
Nasty looking fuzzy stem rot.
Yeah, could be botrytis. That's Brian's area of expertise. I've never seen that before on poppies.
No, that's really.
I would send in a sample to him, especially since that keeps happening every year.
He's got a great photo. If you sent that photo.
Yeah, that might. He probably would have to plate it out anyway and grow it out, but he might, you know, say, I've seen this before.
Yeah, he might say, I've seen this before. There was one other that we hadn't gotten to. Oh, it was a...
Oh, the blue spruce.
A blue spruce. It's raining needles. This is the only, not the only infected spruce in our yard. This is from Mary. We have three dead ones, and there are about a dozen more infected with something.
Okay, I see he's talking about Rhizosphera needle cast, which it could be. Actually, we were just talking about this on our teleconference this morning about evergreen trees being affected primarily by drought, but there are some needle cast diseases out there. So again, sending in a sample to Brian would probably be the best thing.
And Lisa, you did a masterful job. Thank you so much. Wow, the time flew by, and I look forward to your next visit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. She does a great job, doesn't she? Man, oh, man. We had a lot of questions answered today. And I want to thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.